Welcome to New American Radio, a series exploring new territories for the art of radio.
In its 10 years as a weekly national series from 1987 to 1998, New American Radio commissioned and distributed over 300 original works. Conceptual new drama, associational documentary, language explorations, sonic meditations, environmental compositions, musical explorations, and works that pioneer new dimensions in acoustic space. Wave Farm is thrilled to partner with New American Radio to ensure these works remain available to listeners today and into the future. New American Radio was organized by Helen Thorington, executive producer, and Regina Beyer, associate producer. A special thanks to both Helen Thorington and Joanne Green for their generous support and collaboration in this partnership. Up next is Into the Interface by Nori Newmark. Thank you for listening.
Let's see. I think the appropriate uniform would be a wetsuit. I have a hunch or a suspicion that the invention of the wetsuit was the first attempt to submerge the human body in another medium, or to gain access to some kind of experience that is typically considered inhuman or unnatural. The kind of dressing that was involved in the invention of scuba or diving apparatuses was not about protecting oneself from the other, but giving into it. It was not about simply crossing one boundary between a set of oppositions, such as male and female, but rather that the boundary that's being crossed here is between two different media. And that's the kind of speculation with which I'd like to test these waters.
Crossing media, crossing boundaries, gliding through the interface, surfing, skating, merging, submerging. New metaphors for interface are emerging at a rhythmic, algorithmic rate as computers morph and metamorph popular culture. Do you remember when, generations ago, computers were a source of fear and fascination, of addiction and infection? You sat in front of the screen, you kept your distance, your sense of perspective. But now desire draws you across that distance and perspective and speeds you past the screen into the interface. How does this happen? Does the screen look different, or do you look differently at this moment of interface? Moment of interface, a moment of crossing boundaries that resonate beyond the computer, through popular culture and into the city. How do you cross over into the interface? What to wear? How to move? What to imagine? Decisions that give the crossing its texture. Texture. Hypertexture. Tonight's crossing is woven out of hypertext, so you can move easily, quickly, willlessly through the interface.
It's time to weave in and out of the hypertext, to cross into the interface. If you'll get dressed, I'll beam you up and morph you over. Let the metal scales drop from your eyes, shake the water out of your ears. You can hear and feel and see the sounds and surfaces of the new shape of popular culture. And when you emerge from the interface, with new eyes and ears, new skin, new aesthetics, new kinesthetics, you'll see and hear how the city has changed too.
All right.
And now it's time to weave in and out of the hypertext.
Okay.
To cross into hypertext. The interface.
Cross
if
into
you'll
the
get
interface.
Dressed, I'll beam you up.
So I can cross into
over.
The interface anywhere.
Let
in
the
and
metal
out
scales
between
drop
the sound stacks.
Shake the water
dressing
out
room,
of your ear.
Surface,
you can
morph
hear
land,
and feel
speed
and
zone,
see the
desire.
Sounds and surfaces of the new shape
emerge,
of popular culture.
Emerge.
And when
emerge.
You emerge from
merging and surfing. People are attracted by the seductive qualities of cyberspace and of interface because they see in it some fantasy of an other, of an imagined opposite with whom they want to mix and mesh and meld and mesh and blend
and
become absorbed and disappear.
And the whole point of the interface is that you enter into it willlessly, involuntarily, inconspicuously.
Thinking about desire in terms of moving away from the interior structure of things and more to the surface of things, so that the interior structure of things becomes more a creature of the imagination.
And
in a way, in doing that, we're reducing its resolution, or its bandwidth.
Playing with bandwidth
is one of the big issues in constructing desire at the end of the mechanical age. When we deal with things like phone sex, we're really dealing with bandwidth issues. We're dealing with the idea that the less intelligible the voice is, the more desire we can actually put into it.
Even a low-resolution video game appeals much more to a kinesthetic sense. It's partly visual, of course, but the speed with which reaction takes place short-circuits a lot of the cognitive machinery, and so it's more aimed to the sensory experience and less heavily weighted toward the cognitive.
In the 20th century, the development or evolution of human life is connected to technical machinery very closely. It has become part of the body structure and of the perception. And it's not possible to say we have a natural perception of the world. There have been many interfaces and cuts and montages of reality before computers. One thing I realized as a kid when I was 16 or 17, when I started to go to the cinema and crossing the street and looking at cars, that I realized people who didn't go to the cinema, they're very much more in danger in the normal street traffic because their reactions were very slower. When I experienced now playing video games and with the kids on the computer, I realized that they are able to see three or four sources of movement at the same time, whereas I had a sort of perspective view of the depth of the room, which isn't there, and I stuck to one source of movement and concentrated on that. So I realized from one technical generation to another generation, there are very deep differences in perception and reaction, and they really have different eyes.
an iconic presentation, meaning a presentation that lacks depth, that's basically surface, can be very interesting and can traverse a lot of boundaries that if you are presenting yourself with not an iconic but a more essentialist view, you wouldn't be able to traverse those boundaries because your position already implies that you have a territory, that you have a space, a time, a belonging, so you're anchored to something. And as opposed to that, having the mobility of this new iconic surface, you have a lot more capacity of movement. But one has to understand that it is a cultural transformation in perception.
There's always a starting point and a destination, and it replicates the way the computer is based on ones and zeros, and it's also, it replicates male-female distinctions, self and other, nature-culture. I mean, it all works into the whole morphing schema.
That's why I found it suspicious that a machine which knows the truth of the universe as binary opposition should then be used to give us the sense that differences are continual and somehow can be transformed into one another. And probably the most familiar examples are Michael Jackson's video Black and White, in which persons of different races and genders are smoothly transformed one into another to give us the idea that the world is continuous, is precisely antithetical to what the computer is all about. You know, what's being emphasized is the interchangeability and sameness almost, of race. I don't think that helps a whole lot.
Play of gender and race and sexuality that's often talked about in terms of not only morphing but network, you know, all of these people changing identities. It seems like by doing it high tech it's validated, but I really think that if people saw a drag show they would not react the same way. There is still a real physical, sometimes objection, A-B-G-E-C-T-I-O-N, to drag shows in popular culture, whereas people can watch Michael Jackson's video and not feel any of that. So it might elide things and make them seem like it really is about cross-gender and cross-race and cross-cultural, but it's not until you get into the real situation, the face-to-face, rather than the technologized face.
To cross into the interface.
Cross to the dressing room.
If you'll get dressed.
I would be wearing an Armani suit, probably a reflective kind of sunglasses, rollerblades, or some kind of inline skates with hyper wheels. Some kind of head-mounted device that, if I speak, I can interact with the information that's flowing on the screen. Hyperwheels are basically a reference to speed in terms of moving through real space. The skates in general, are just a way of expressing liquidity, moving through real space rapidly. There's a real nomadic culture that's being created for men who wear Armani suits, who are powerful executives that can travel all over the world and have their digital assistants with them. The Apple Newton is one such device that allows for almost complete nomadism.
A re-anchoring in capitalism, which requires that kind of acceleration in order to keep going.
In the suit that I'm in, the Armani suit and the rollerblades and the nomadic devices, a lot of it is about profit. And with that goes the power of being able to travel anywhere you want and still be connected.
Sounds and surfaces of the new surfaces. Shape of popular culture.
Shape.
And when you emerge from the interface with new eyes and ears, new skin,
aesthetics.
New aesthetics, new kinesthetics.
When people first started talking about the possibility of cyberspace, about simulations as a space in which one could move and actually, in some sense, inhabit. The dimensionality of that transformation was very important because how it was figured is a movement from a flat screen on which something is displayed to an opening up of the area behind the screen, to give the viewer the sense that the screen is not a barrier, but the screen is a window that you can fly through.
The screen, it is a surface, and it changes the perception of space totally. Space is disappearing from the human perception.
The more immersive the technology becomes, the more sensory it becomes.
How the city has changed too.
Oh, new skin aesthetics.
And now it's time to weave in and out of the hypertext to cross into the
Etymologically, chrome in ancient Greek means not only color, but skin. And the idea then of producing a chrome body is very fascinating to me, because it's almost as if etymologically there is some primordial connection between skin and chrome and color and perception.
Yes, and of course the wonderful thing about chrome is that it reflects everything. You know, you see everything else in it, but rather than it. What you see is all the reflections rather than the thing itself. The glittery shell, the surface that hides. And the more glittery it is, the more it hides and the more it suggests.
Why is there a consistent genealogy from the chrome of the 30s to something like the pulp representations in comic books of the Silver Surfer or other similar bodies to this highly technological and high-tech version of some kind of future post-technological being? What I've called the metamorph in Terminator 2, this liquid metalloid being. And one thing you can say is that the people who invented rendering or are on the forefront of computer imaging were influenced and came out of the whole aesthetic of science fiction. Now, the interesting thing about a figure like the Metamorph is that it represents a product of a computer, and yet it has no such apparatus, no memory, brain, or teleological principle. So in beckoning towards the future, it's almost regressing and showing us a kind of past, which is this dream of a body that is somehow self-organizing or morphogenetic.
With technology today, objects are all surface. They're all exterior. Because at the beginning of the machine age, technological objects were made of gears and wheels and levers, and you could see them. I mean, machines in that way inscribed their own purpose. And later on, we began to see the development of streamlining, putting some kind of a shroud around the object. I've got a picture on my wall at home of a vacuum cleaner, which was, for me, the favorite example of this. Vacuum cleaners used to look like motors and blowers, and you saw all of it. And then came a kind of a vacuum cleaner where there was a shroud around the motor and the blower. And the motor and the blower were still in there, but you couldn't see them anymore. Instead, what you saw was this round, featureless, shiny, smooth surface. When we draw attention away from the works, from the intestines and the glands and the smells and the tastes and the sounds of the actual workings of things, we're pushing the works into the background. We're metaphorizing them. And in the process of metaphorizing them, we make them desirable in some very strange ways, either desirable or frightening, or maybe both at the same time.
I live in Southern California in Los Angeles, and pervasive fact of life here is traffic, often traffic that doesn't move. And I notice in myself, and I notice in a lot of people in an area like this, an increasing impatience with materiality, impatience with the resistance that materiality offers in our lives, the wish that you could transport yourself from A to B with no friction and almost no time.
Hyperactivity, hypertext, hyperactivity. Hyperactivity in what's called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders indicates three primary characteristics of this disorder that they call attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Overactivity, impulsive responding, and a lack of attention span. In terms of hypertext, the last two, lack of attention span and impulsive responding, are almost exactly what hypertext markets itself as. You know, you can really interrupt the structure of a hypertext wherever you want. One of the questions that I have about the way in which hypertext is being marketed to culture is I'm wondering if this disorder that's prevalent in children is going to be exacerbated by the presence of hypertext in their educations, and what kind of results it's going to produce in culture.
City.
depth. If you're interfacing with the city, for instance, I have begun to use rollerblades. What happens is that, in a way, walking has become obsolete, and you almost become a cyborg in using these wheels to move, wheels on your feet. And that brings along with it a certain amount of gear. In a way, this gear reflects the kind of things that we see on video monitors and video games. So little by little, all of your body becomes like a robot. The city kind of becomes a very literal territory on which realities which are more virtual, like the ones of the computer, are played out. You glide in and out of the streets, but also in and out of different realities, like a virtual reality as opposed to a city reality.
I don't understand why one has to have a machine to supersede our symbolic faculties. Okay, because that's what the whole idea of the interface is. It's the idea of something stimulating our senses in a way that confuses or obviates the brain. What do we want from our senses? The whole idea of entering an interface, that is teletopia, places that don't exist, places that we, in which we're interacting right now, it's an enigma to me.
You just heard Into the Interface by Noreen Newmark, broadcast by New American Radio.